This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
For our first story this hour, though, we are looking at the struggles that Orang Asli face in our country and also asking the question whether or not enough has been done.
This is, of course, not the first time this question has been asked, but it's been brought up again because of the health and safety emergency that's affecting the Batik tribe in Kelantan. The crisis in Kuala Lumpur hit its peak when the community experienced 14 alleged deaths in the last month. The main source has yet to be determined, but it is allegedly due to contaminated water from illegal mining near the water sources.
So two of the 14 deaths have been confirmed to be due to pneumonia, and authorities are now working with the community in order to find the 12 graves in the jungle and exhume the bodies for a post-mortem. Meanwhile, more than 50 people are still in the hospital, with some in intensive care and more being admitted by the day. 47 others have been treated for respiratory problems.
A report in the Star said the deaths didn't come as a surprise to the Orang Asli community, nor the NGOs that work in that region. Living conditions are so bad that those living there are susceptible to diseases easily, and most don't live past 60. The pollution is also nothing new and has only worsened over the years despite complaints to the Kelantan state government.
Johan Khalid of NGO Sahabat Jariah said even as far back as 2010, the water source had been polluted due to deforestation in Kuala Lumpur. And Johan also said that while the government did build concrete houses for the community, they didn't have water or electricity supply.
The Batik tribe is Malaysia's last indigenous nomadic community. There are about 2,000 of them in the whole peninsula. The Batik people in Kuala Lumpur are the worst off. They are plagued with issues like poor access to healthcare, rampant deforestation of their rainforest home, and being surrounded by pesticides from the palm oil and rubber plantations, which have poisoned the land and their water supply.
So we wanted to take this opportunity to ask, like we said, it's a recurring question, you know, whether or not enough has been done for a community that has been traditionally and increasingly marginalised over the years, right? And this is something that came up particularly because we spoke earlier this week about the New Zealand well-being budget.
Yes.
And how it's built on five main focuses, one of which is actually a focus on the Indigenous peoples of New Zealand. And that kind of purposeful focus, I think, goes a long way towards making people feel that they are being centralized in what the government wants to do. Right now, of course, with long-running, maybe conflict is, I don't think conflict is too strong a word. I mean, you know, with long-running conflicts about land rights in more than one spot in the country, I think it is worth asking whether or not we are only looking at Orang Asli issues when through a very narrow lens, as opposed to taking a wide scale look and saying, broadly speaking, is enough being done? Why is it that the same issues keep coming up time and time again? And is the recurrence of those issues preventing us from looking at other matters as well?
Yeah, or is it also the situation where, well, they have been so easily left out of the picture and of development for such a long time that we can continue to do so as a nation and just focus on, I guess, some of the big problems that we still face today, including that $1 trillion debt, and then just move on without considering the fact that they also, the Orang Asli community, need to be part of that development too, and leaving them behind. The longer we leave it behind, the harder it will be to deal with in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to try to get this big picture view about how well or not really we have done for Orang Asli communities in our country. You know, have there been enough provisions? Is the government doing enough? We're going to be speaking after this with Kamal Solhaimi Fadzil, who is a lecturer in the Department of Anthropology and Sociology in the University of Malaya. And that will be coming your way after this. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming up to 6:14 in the evening, and we're looking today at the struggles that Orang Asli face in our country and asking whether or not enough has been done. We would like to hear from you as well. What would you like to see done, you know, about this? This is, of course, in light of the crisis that has been occurring up in Kelantan with the Batik tribe. And we just thought it would be a good time to put the lens firmly on this question. You can get in touch with us. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're crossing over now to Kamal Solhaimi Fadzil, who's a lecturer in the Department of Anthropology and Sociology from UM. Kamal, thanks for joining us. So up till today, we are reading news about a variety of issues that Orang Asli have to face: lack of clean water, encroachment of land, problems with access to healthcare, and so on. Why is this still happening in Malaysia in 2019?
So I think it's a deceptively easy answer to a common question. So a lot of the Orang Asli communities today may be in areas that state governments may not recognize as being part of their customary land or residence, place of official or formal settlement. And so to the state, these are areas that can be exploited for commercial interests. Two sides to the problem, of course. One is whole idea of recognition of rights. So the indigenous communities see this as their traditional landscape, and so they claim traditional rights to this landscape. That's one. The state may not recognize it or may not even realize that they are there officially. I mean, officially, they might not realize that they are there. Number two is this whole idea of giving out licensing to mining and logging and other commercial interests in forested area should be monitored to ensure it is sustainable and it adheres to certain environmental principles. I think in the case of Orang Asli, both these things have not been taken into account well enough.
Are there specific problems that are keeping the Orang Asli from accessing various forms of support from the government?
Okay, so I don't think they're denied healthcare services and support. The thing is, we need to link impact on the community with activities that takes place around them to contextualize the problem. So if you're dealing with, say, in the case of Polaco that we keep hearing in the papers today, right? You have this mysterious illness and all that stuff. Okay, treat it. I think the doctors have been doing a fantastic job. They go in, they provide medical services. In a lot of other places, the medical teams do go in at least once or twice a month. The services are there. But then, are we just treating the symptom and not trying to understand the underlying cause? So medical doctors are doing a great job, but are we linking the illnesses and the condition to factors that require other agencies to get involved? The communication there is not just about actually accessing services, but it's also other government departments and agencies at the state level taking responsibility when they license things to look at how it may impact on populations that live there.
As we said earlier, Johan Khalid of Sahabat Jariah said that in response to the ongoing Kuala Koh cases, poor health among the Orang Asli is the result of plantations, mining and logging. How much is the community brought into talks before these projects just get underway?
In certain places like this, where the state may not recognise indigenous land rights, they would not see a need to consult the indigenous community. It is purely a bureaucratic matter, a state matter. So you go, you apply for your license, the state consults the various agencies, maybe environmental agencies, you know, the various related agencies, and they go about it. We don't really have a mechanism that requires the kind of town hall meeting that would better reflect an inclusive process in getting the pre-prior informed consent. We don't have that kind of process as far as I know. We do have a consent process, but usually it's just talking to JAKWA, talking to the headman, and perhaps the community committee, development committee. But we don't have an inclusive process when dealing with matters like logging. And I don't think the state has a mechanism for that, especially not in areas that they don't recognize as indigenous customary land.
Have you seen the situation change much over the years? Has there been a change for the better in certain aspects, and which areas are still lagging behind in improvement?
definitely from a personal point of view, no. But it's just my personal opinion. I may not have that much of ground experience in that sense. But in the last 20 years or so, since I started visiting various villages, what you see now is more and more communities are finding themselves at odds with privatization or commercialization of the land that they also live on, that they claim as their customary land. So no, you find more people now going to court to contest over their land. You find people, you find communities marginalized as a result of areas being opened up for other interests. I mean, of late, we've all been made aware of orang asli communities who set up blockades because they don't want loggers to come into their customary areas, right? So these are things that seem to be on the increase rather than a decrease. And we don't really hear, except maybe for the case of Selangor some years back, where the government took the initiative to set up a land council to work on some of this, some of these problems by mapping out indigenous areas. I don't think it's happened anywhere else. And from what I hear, that land council no longer exists in Selangor today. So yeah, maybe over the last 20 years that I started getting interested in this issue, I don't think we are moving in a direction that allows us to adequately address the interests of the orang asli community, while the state also having its right to develop. No, I don't think they've done that.
And to your knowledge, how has government support for orang asli communities developed over the years?
So in terms of providing education or talking about education, providing healthcare services, building maybe roads in some places and all those stuff, yeah, I think those things are definitely ongoing. But where I would think a big gap, so you have physical development, but I think one of the big gaps is in addressing rights and in getting communities and in engaging communities towards having a voice, having a platform that empowers them, that engages them to seek consent, That whole thing under the UNDRIP, the free, prior, informed consent, I think that's a large part that still needs to be discussed, to be developed as an instrument in which anytime there is an encroachment or anytime there is lack of a better word, intrusion into areas that orang asli have settled, are settled and continue to claim customary, I think we need to have these conversations in which orang asli community members are engaged in a discussion and where their consent is actively sought after. You seek their consent, and instead of going to a headman or to a committee, perhaps we need one that is a lot more sensitive and inclusive. One that includes not just the community and the headman, but also other members of the society, of the community, including different gender, age groups, as well as different interests within a community. A community is a very diverse and heterogeneous thing, So it's not enough to just think, okay, I've been around the village, I'll talk to the headman. We have to find a mechanism that allows for to capture a much wider audience and participation. So no, I think in terms of inclusive, what we need to develop is in terms of engaging consent in a more inclusive manner.
To bring it back to the crisis in Kuala Lumpur, what outcomes do you hope to see from this?
I mean, one thing that we're seeing is probably a one size doesn't fit all. The idea that, you've got an outbreak, we can send in our team, we can look at it. I think what we need in situations like this is definitely to include an angle that also attempts to understand the cultural and community values on one hand, but also one that can look at the situation there in a holistic way, not just from a community or cultural diverse lens, but one that also takes into account the development interventions in that landscape, over a period of time, and how over this period of time, say 5 years or 10 years, have compounded the impact on the community.
And Kamal, earlier this week, we did discuss New Zealand's recently announced wellbeing budget, which will include budget allocation for the support of Indigenous communities through healthcare, education, employment. Is something similar needed here in Malaysia, where higher budget allocations would directly address the wellbeing of Orang Asli communities?
Yes, but it has to be premised on a very fundamental principle of inclusivity and respect for the Indigenous cultural autonomy. You cannot just increase the budget for a business as usual. We need to go back to what are some of the fundamental flaws in the way we deal with the Indigenous communities here. And going back to the fundamental, from my point of view, it goes back to recognizing land rights and recognizing generally a sense of Indigenous rights. I think if you go back to instruments like the UN DRIP, it gives you a good sense of where we should be in dealing with Indigenous communities. But fundamental to that is recognizing that Indigenous communities have rights to cultural autonomy, customary land, and that any activity that is going to be on these areas or in these areas that they live in require that their consent is actively sought, you know? And it's that fundamental respect for them as Indigenous communities, not just as citizens, you know, citizens definitely, but above that as Indigenous communities with Indigenous rights. That fundamental is what New Zealand has. So above that, yes, then they can increase their education budget, health budget and the such, because they already have a good framework in dealing with Indigenous people in a way which respects the Indigenous rights.
Kamal, thanks for sharing your views with us. That was Kamal Sulhaimi Fadzil, lecturer in the Department of Anthropology and Sociology from UM, weighing in on the central question that we wanted to pose today, which is enough being done for the Orang Asli communities within our country? This is in light of the emerging health and safety crisis that has hit the Batik tribe in Kelantan, where we've seen 14 alleged deaths. And it is, like we said, a recurring theme. It's something that we're talking about now because of the news. But truth be told, we could talk about it at any time and it would be timely.
Yeah, this issue is ever pressing. And it's not that the government hasn't really been taking the issue seriously, but perhaps not seriously enough. You know, of recent times, we have seen the government working together with Orang Asli communities to sue state governments, as well as, you know, them being on the ground, visiting settlements, talking to the communities there. That's a step in the right direction, but is it a step too small?
I think the question here is really down to centralization. Are you centralizing the issues and needs of this community in a sufficient way? It's not enough to piecemeal it. It's not enough to, you know, every now and then, whenever there's a crisis, go, huh, have we done enough? You know, if it were a priority, then perhaps this wouldn't be such a thing. On Twitter, Un'i says, don't we generally only care about groups in proportion to their economic power or voter counts? Which is a message that makes me so sad, partly because it's so true.
It is, though there also must be a sort of realization that the Orang Asli do have some amount of power as voters. You know,
yes.
We see that in Cameron Highlands when they tried to woo local communities there. But it's only in those instances that when we start caring about their welfare.
Yes, and also that just shouldn't be the way when
about
how you allocate needs, how you allocate budgets. Let us know your thoughts. Should more be done? What should be done? Talk to us. Call 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.